the Business on RTE Radio 1 with AIB. You see it, we help you do it. AIB, for the life you're after.
Christmas is, of course, a time of love songs, mistletoe, and heartbreak sometimes too. Our next guest is a man who has, in a sense, made his money from love songs and maybe even heartbreak. In fact, his business has, on occasion, broken his heart too. But it's a huge business these days with dozens employed, including his two sons, Aaron and Daniel. Recently, he teamed up with Ed Sheeran to create a new product. It's been a big hit. I called into his busy workshop to hear all about it. I'm here just outside Cross Gar, south of Belfast, and I'm going to meet George Loudon of Loudon Guitars. Here we are. Hello, George.
Hello, Richard.
How are you doing?
You're very welcome.
Thank you very much. Yeah. It's lovely to be here. Beautiful, quiet countryside around here. Is quietness good for making guitars?
Quietness and dryness. And dryness in Ireland isn't, you know, what you get normally, but we try.
Hard to find. And I see you have the whole operation around here. Can we have a look around?
Yep, sure. Glad to show you around.
It's right, pretty noisy,
pretty
George.
Noisy. So this is the machine shop, you know, where we get all the... you know, we get all the big pieces of timber in and we cut them up and get them ready for seasoning, you know. So
it's a beautiful smell of wood as soon as you come in.
I'm used to that, but yeah. So I'll take you up and show you through the wood store first, which is very interesting. So Richard, this is the wood store, and as you can see, it's there's piles and piles and piles of all kinds of rosewood and ebony. And exotic woods like cocobolo, all stacked here, seasoning.
Is there anywhere quieter we could go and sit down and have a chat?
Sure, absolutely, and I'll take you there now. So Richard, this is where I do my own work. I make prototypes here. I also, with my sons actually, Aaron and Daniel, and a couple of the best guys, we make what we call the Master Series.
After all these years of making guitars, do you still make mistakes and have to start again or redo a section?
Unfortunately, yes. You know, that's the nature of working with wood, that sometimes wood just comes up to bite you, you know, because wood has, every piece of wood's different. And of course, from experience, I know that you have to treat each piece of wood as an individual piece in the way you work with it, you know, the way you use a chisel to approach it, the way you use a plane. It's all very specific and a skill that takes years to develop, and even when you have developed it, it still surprises you sometimes, so mistakes do happen, yeah.
You don't tire of actually making guitars yourself.
No.
You find the time to still do that?
I still find the time. Maybe my hearing isn't as good as it used to be, and maybe I have to wear glasses now and all that sort of stuff, but I still love doing it. Love being at the bench. My son Aaron and my son Daniel over there, we all love nothing better than being at the bench all the time, you know.
George, 50 years of making guitars. Where did it all start? When you were a kid, were you interested in them?
Yeah, well, in 1961, I would say, I was 10 years old, and the Beatles were just becoming, you know, sort of known, I suppose. And so I started to get this kind of fantasy idea about the guitar. Of course, I couldn't afford one. And I think my father bought me a very cheap one just to get me started, sort of thing. And then a friend of mine, whose father was a cabinet maker, he helped us make a sort of a guitar, you know, when we were about 11.
When you say a sort of a guitar, what was it like?
So the sort of the guitar was a piece of hardboard cut in a figure eight, and then a hole cut out of the middle of it, and then there was a square box glued onto the back just to give it some sort of sound box. And then we hammered nails into the neck and bent them over for the fret, you know, for frets and so on. And we used fishing line for strings. And we, you know, pranced around the garden thinking we were going to be the next Beatles.
What did it sound like?
You know what? I can't remember. So it obviously wasn't very memorable.
But most people, kids who are interested in guitars, they're interested in
being a superstar and being on television and playing it. Mm. It's rare that someone would decide, let's try and make one.
Well, I guess it's not as rare these days as it was back then. It was very, very rare then. But I read a magazine article about a guitar maker in the south of England called Tony Zamatis, who was a cabinet maker, but he was building guitars for people like Eric Clapton, who was one of my sort of guitar idols at the time. And I thought, well, so a cabinet maker can make guitars for Eric Clapton? You know, so I was kind of, my interest was sparked, and I phoned up his wife, actually, and asked her for some advice. Could I get a book on how to start and so on? So she gave me information about a little book, and it was actually a booklet. And I got it and used that to get started, got some wood and just got stuck in. I had no training in woodwork, so it was a very naive thing to do. But, you know.
Do you remember your first client that you made a guitar and sold it to someone?
Yeah, I do. I made three guitars at the beginning. Again, that was naive, because if I'd just made one, I could have learned what I learned from one bad guitar and made the next one a little bit better and so on. But I made three at the beginning, and the first one I sold for, I think, 50 quid back then. It sounded great, but the workmanship was absolutely shockingly bad, because I didn't know what I was doing. But it sounded good, and there was enough. There was enough encouragement in that for me to keep going. Yeah.
At what point then did you realize, you know, I could make a living out of this? This is what I want to do.
Again, probably naively, I thought that right from the very beginning. I was so keen to do it. You know, it was just a question of necessity is the mother of invention. So if I needed to put food on the table, then I was in the workshop to all hours in the night, you know, whatever it took. One of the turning points that came was a friend of mine by the name of Alistair Burke, whose father was the moderator of the Presbyterian Church up here in Northern Ireland. He was a guitar player. I made a guitar for him. And unknown to me, he was studying in France at the time at university. Unknown to me, he took my guitar around some shops in Paris. And the best acoustic guitar shop in Paris at the time phoned up and said they wanted to order six. And then when we eventually made the six guitars, we put them in the back of his Renault 5 and drove the whole way to Paris just for the adventure.
Customer service.
Customer service. We didn't declare them at customs. we just sort of went with three and we took them to the shop, and then they sold them very quickly and wanted six a month from us. So then I had to start employing people and teaching them and so on. So that was a turning point.
One of the other things you discovered along the way was a different type of tooling, a different type of chisel, Japanese chisels. Yeah, Japanese. How did that come about?
So when I got to 1980, which was about, 6 years after I started, I was making guitars that were in a lot of demand, but I had also struggled to make the business side of it work. You know, it's a craft after all, and it's not like buying something in and selling it for 50% more, and it's not like that. You have to make everything, you have to import all the wood, so it's a difficult business. So by 1980, I had developed this great guitar that was in a lot of demand, but I'd also lost a lot of money. So I decided to go back to working on my own, not employing people. And a Swiss shop that was selling my guitars in Geneva, they asked me, could they try and find a company that would make the guitars under license? And that was in Japan. And when I went out there, they took me to a tool shop, and I was like a kid in a candy shop. I'd never seen anything like it. These tools were amazing.
What's different about them? You have some here,
yeah,
George.
I have some here. So for example, this is a Japanese jointer plane, so it's quite long. I mean, it looks very basic. It's just a hunk of beautiful oak, and it has a very thick blade in it. But you can, using Japanese waterstones, you can get an edge in these tools, which is unsurpassed. I'd never experienced anything like it. When you cut wood with one of these Japanese planes that's been properly sharpened, the surface on the wood after you've planed it or chiseled it feels like glass. Literally feels like glass.
And where did that come from in Japan? Was it for instruments? Was it for just general woodcraft work?
In Japan, there's a strong tradition of woodwork for everything, furniture making, house building, and musical instruments, of course. So they, you know, these were being used in the small factory that was making my guitars. And they showed me them, took me to the shop, and I bought some, and I've never looked back. And basically, in those days, funny enough, the 80s, nobody wanted to buy acoustic guitars. It was really a bad time for me to have started my business, if you like.
Why was that? Because the 70s were more acoustic, or was it a recession?
The 70s were very much acoustic. The 80s were very much electronic music, you know, keyboards, big lapels, you know, everybody wearing those big lapels and standing in front of an electronic keyboard.
So Ultravox.
Yeah, exactly. And nobody was really interested in acoustic guitars. So sales went through the floor, really. So that was a bad time. And, you know, all I was able to get per guitar was about 350 quid back then, which is not, even back then, wasn't very much money. So it was difficult to make it work financially. And so there was a period of 14 years, actually, where I was licensing the designs out to the owners of the company. 2003, I decided to take the license back and start my own workshop again. By that time, you know, the acoustic guitar market was much better than it had been in the 80s. Wouldn't have been hard, mind you. So I felt the time was right for me to start my own workshops again, which I did in Downpatrick.
Did it feel like you were starting the business from scratch almost again?
Absolutely, it did. Because when I went into the workshops in Downpatrick, started them, they were just bare walls. There was nothing there, no benches, no electricity even. We had to get that in. And so it was literally starting from scratch.
A lot of very famous guitarists have played and bought and used Loudon guitars.
That's right. Now that's correct.
Have you ever got starstruck with any of them?
I suppose, I was always very starstruck with Eric Clapton. I always sort of thought he was, I still admired him so much back in the, would have been in the late 80s, around about 1987. That I actually went and knocked on his door one night. My timing wasn't very good. It was New Year's Eve. And I knocked on his door near Guildford, and pitch black outside. And so there's this guy standing outside the door he'd never seen before. And I sort of was tongue-tied when he opened the door himself, you know. I was tongue-tied, and he looked at me and he said, "Take it easy, man." And then I explained... who I was, and I would like him to look at the guitar sometime, give me his feedback. And he was very friendly and said that he would, but he couldn't do it right then because he had people in, New Year's Eve, go figure. So my timing wasn't amazing.
But you got your foot in the door, literally.
I did, and actually he saw Paul Brady playing the guitars sometime later in Ronnie Scott's club in London, and was very keen to get one, so Paul came to us, and we made him one, and he used it to record his two acoustic albums, Pilgrim and Reptile. So that, you know, that was a big thing for me.
Others, you must have had people, very famous people, owning one of your guitars and you didn't know that they owned it.
Sometimes that happens too. I remember one of the most striking examples of that was the time I got an email from Bruce Springsteen's guitar tech asking me could I send him over a guitar bridge because the bridge had come off Bruce's guitar and I didn't even know that he had one. So that was nice.
What about Gary Lightbody? Because Snow Patrol and his connection with Loudon kind of led to other bigger things for the firm. How long have you known him, or has he been using your guitars for a long time?
So I can't remember the first time I met Gary. It was probably in the OEA Centre in Belfast many years ago, probably 10 years ago, something like that. And he was, again, very friendly, and he saw my guitars And he said, I've always wanted one of those. So it was easy, really. He went over and played one. Oh, I'll have that, you know, and that was nice. That was the beginning of a good relationship. And he's bought quite a few guitars over the years. But he came to me about 6 years ago, maybe seven, and said, George, look, I'd like you to make a guitar for Ed Sheeran. And of course I said yes.
And how many?
Yeah, well, exactly. And I can't sweep you off of your feet. So I went up the North Coast and designed a small guitar, because I knew Ed really liked small ones, and designed this guitar, which we've now called the Wee. I mean, everything's Wee in Northern Ireland, so why not, you know? So it's called the Wee Loudon. Built that for Ed. So he got the first one, actually, first prototype, and really liked it. And then he came to the factory next time he was playing in, I think it was in the Odyssey some years back, and he came down to see us and bought a whole lot of guitars, and then we've sort of developed the relationship since then.
And the Ed Sheeran range, which in the factory there, yeah, you have sort of somewhat compartmentalized, yeah, from the Loudon range. Yeah. What's the difference with the Ed Sheeran guitar?
So the whole idea about the Ed Sheeran project and the guitars themselves was to make a guitar which would be affordable for younger people. Because I know that Ed is absolutely very keen that young people in schools and so on would pick up the acoustic guitar and start playing music rather than, I suppose, sitting all day in front of a screen, you know. So he's very keen on that. Ordinarily, a guitar at that price would be made in China or possibly Mexico or Indonesia or somewhere like that. But I wanted to try and do it here. So the two methods of making, there's the Loudon and then there's the Sheeran by Loudon. The method of making is very different on the Sheeran by Loudon. It's very high tech. Took us about 3-4 years to get to the point where we were happy with the technology.
How do you find working with stars, music stars, people like Ed Sheeran? What's he like?
Ed is what you would expect. Ed is a delight to work with. He's very friendly. He's very open. He's very encouraging, and he takes time with people. So, for example, when he's been around the workshops, you know, he's quite happy to take time to talk to the folk making the guitars. And he's a great guy. Funny enough, the guitars are in the hands of some other people that I don't know, that I've never met. I've never met John Mayer, for example, or Noel Gallagher. But I know that they have, you know, used the guitars on occasions.
And there's quite a variety in there. Niall Horan as well.
Oh, Niall, yeah. Well, I know Niall quite well. He's like me. He's got the golfing disease. So I know him quite well.
It's incurable, apparently.
It is incurable, yeah. Niall's been here at the workshops, and he plays the guitar a lot. So, yeah, he's great to work with also.
Did you ever think when you started off with that first dodgy guitar that you might end up where you are today?
Not in the least. No, I only had one desire, which was to make the best guitars that could be made, and whatever happened was whatever happened.
Well, it certainly happened. Yeah. George Loudon, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.
Thanks very much, Richard. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.